Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout each month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez. She alternates weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I'm the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesdays features Nature Spirituality with none other than Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursday for Moon Magic with David and Jeanette Ewing. We have such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and we at Circle Sanctuary hope that you try them all. This year at Samhain, Circle Sanctuary ordained three new ministers. In December, we met Reverend Judith Sazes, one of Circle Sanctuary's new ministers. Tonight, I have the honor of introducing the other two newly ordained Circle Sanctuary ministers, Reverend Andrew Baer of California and Reverend James Jeffer of New York. Andrew Baer was born and raised in the Chicago area, where he learned not to put his tongue on cold metal playground equipment during winter. Andrew moved to California, where he fell in love with the land, redwood forest, mountains, and the ocean. He has lived in California for over 30 years. He presently lives near Monterey Bay on the coastal Central California coast. Andrew has been a lover of nature since he was a boy, but he wasn't exposed to nature spirituality until he was in his 40s. He met Selena Fox and first learned of Circle Sanctuary at Pantheon. Andrew has studied through the Ovate grade of the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids, and has studied closely with R.J. Stewart and Anastasia Nutt of the Western tradition. Andrew has been an Eagle activist, organizing and participating in many direct action campaigns against fossil fuel industry. He also is an animal rights activist and is engaged in animal rights outreach, marches, and direct action. He has worked professionally as a healthcare chaplain for the past 14 years, 8 years with hospice, and the last 6 years in the hospital setting. He's married to another Circle Sanctuary minister who we all know, we've had her on before, Charlotte Baer. They have one son who is competing his fourth year of college, and they're delighted to live with two beautiful collies. James Jeffer is a six-year veteran of the U.S. States Army. From 2012 to 2018, he has served as chaplain assistant in the 82nd Airborne Division and as a psychological operations sergeant in the United States Army Special Operations Command. In 2018, James entered seminary at the Colgate Rochester Rosser Divinity School, where he completed studies for a Master of Divinity degree. After several years participating in Circle Sanctuary's Open Circle Military Ministries, James entered Circle Sanctuary's Minister Training Program in 2019 and was ordained, as we said, in Samhain in 2021. He currently has a hand in each military and educational ministry of Circle Sanctuary, serving as administrator for the Pagan Military Association and as an ombudsman for the ministry training program. He currently resides in New York, where he continues to serve in the National Guard as a human resource officer. I'm so honored to be able to introduce these two new ministers to the Circle Talk community. Let's welcome Reverend Andrew and Reverend James to Circle Talk. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations on your recent ordination.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Deborah.
So, I'm always so interested in where people began, so we'll kind of start out with that. And, Andrew, you really, really perked my interest because I always ask people, did they grow up pagan, what faith they grow up in? But you said up front you didn't really wasn't exposed to nature spirituality until your 40s. Tell me about that journey.
Yeah, well, I think I was exposed to nature spirituality as a child. I just didn't consider it to be nature spirituality. I've always loved being in the forest and spending time by rivers and getting to know the birds in the area. I really credit my father to instilling in me a love of nature, and he gave me a deck of cards from the Audubon Society that has it's kind of like a bird guide in cards, and I enjoyed getting to know the birds of my area. And when I was a young kid, I used to climb the maple tree in our backyard and just spend lots of time in that tree. So I've been nature connected all my life. We were raised in the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, which is a very conservative branch of the Lutheran Church. And it didn't take, and it wasn't for me. And I remember when I was in high school, and I realized I'm pretty big now, and I don't think my parents could physically force me to go to church. I stopped going. And then I spent, you know, until my 20s, I really didn't reconnect with anything that would be considered, you know, a spirituality or that I considered spirituality. I've always been interested in, you know, I was exploring, I think the first thing that attracted me was in my 20s coming across the Carlos Castaneda books of Don Juan and got interested in shamanism and things like that. And I've been interested in native spiritualities and, you know, have studied with a few folks over the years, but it always felt, you know, somewhat uncomfortable because I wasn't connected with the culture that these teachings came from, and I was interested in, you know, how can I connect with the land, but in a way that's, you know, authentic to me and, you know, the cultural milieu that I was raised in. And it wasn't really until, you know, I was having all kinds of experiences with nature, and I was having a hard time understanding them. And it wasn't until I was actually, I was working as a chaplain at the time, and a friend of mine was a druid, and she was giving a presentation at Pantheacon on pagan pastoral care, and she said, you should come check out, you know, what she was doing. So I attended Pantheacon, which is a large pagan conference in San Jose, where I was living at the time. And it wasn't until attending Pantheacon that I really was exposed to the rich diversity of pagan traditions, and I met a variety of teachers, and that was really the beginning of when I began learning about, you know, European and pagan traditions.
Great. So, James, how was it for you? Were you raised pagan as a child?
So I definitely was not raised pagan. I believe Andrew mentioned the Missouri Synod Lutherans, and similar background for me. I was raised Free Methodist, which is also a very conservative expression of Protestantism. But one thing I'll say about my family is that even though we attended relatively traditional churches, free inquiry was very encouraged. It was partially encouraged just because my family was so much kind of a religiously diverse place. My various aunts explored indigenous paths, Buddhism. My grandmother insisted that she was Catholic to her grave, but she was more inclined to attend UU services when they would do spiritualist things. So it was a very mixed place. And what's different for me though is that initially that kind of traditional Christianity took. I really wasn't exploring. And in retrospect, I think what was probably missing for me was that it was very much a religion of logic rather than experience. I was very devout in reading scriptures and studying theology and all those things, but it was more in my head than in my heart. And I really got turned towards paganism in ways that were almost an interruption to my life. When I joined the military, that was literally the first time I'd ever slept outside. I was very thoroughly a creature of the suburbs, a creature of the city. I'd never gone camping. And really there was that second night, I think, that I was outside in training, I had a very clear come to Goddess sort of experience when I was just out in nature. And I felt that, you know, it's almost as though the universe became bigger, and I was like, this is much more complicated than I've been led to believe. And it got me started on a path of studying world religions. I read the Bhagavad Gita while I was in basic training, and just started exploring everything, and it eventually led me to Fort Bragg Open Circle, which is a ministry of Circle Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm. So that's so interesting. So both of you basically found this path as adults.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's correct.
So interesting.
Yeah,
I don't think. I don't think I would have self-described as pagan until I was about 27. Yeah.
All right. So, what was your connect? I know both of you had a connection with Circle. I know Andrew had met, but what made you go from hearing about Circle Sanctuary, maybe meeting Selena, to entering the minister training program? Who wants to go first?
Yeah, I'd be happy to share
Andrew,
about
we'll
that.
Start with you.
Sorry,
sure.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so, well, it was at Pantheacon when I first met Selena and learned about Circle Sanctuary, and I remember seeing that they're from Wisconsin, and, you know, being in California, I was like, oh, that's too bad, they're so far away. But also, growing up in the Chicago area, and I went to school in Madison, and I've got cousins and relatives throughout Wisconsin.
Oh.
So I love Wisconsin, and appreciated that they were in Wisconsin, but felt like there really wasn't a way for me to be connected with the community living in California. And, you know, over the years, you know, at Pantheacon, Selena's been there every year and getting to know more about Circle. I think Charlotte was the one that really initiated a more in-depth exploration of the ministry training program. And, you know, the more I learned about Circle Sanctuary, what I especially appreciated about Circle Sanctuary is it's such an open tradition, and it's a tradition that all of the various, you know, kind of areas that I've studied and practiced and have been interested in all have a home within Circle Sanctuary. So I really appreciated that it wasn't forcing me to say we're this tradition or we're this tradition, and that I could be really authentic to who I am in this tradition. And then I started meeting people in the community, and I just really fell in love with the community. And the more I learned, the more it just felt like a community I wanted to be connected with, but also a community I wanted to, you know, bring, you know, whatever it is I have to offer, I wanted to bring it to service to the community, and really appreciate, you know, so many dimensions of things that have been important in my life, from ecological activism to civil rights and religious rights, that Selena and the Circle community have been on the forefront of a lot of those things and really involved. So, you know, it was just the more I learned, the more I got to know, the more I felt at home and wanted
be a part of
connect
it.
More deeply with this community,
yeah.
And to be of service to the community.
Well, we're very excited to have you as a new minister. James, tell us how you got interconnected deeper with Circle and what led you to the minister training program?
Yeah, so it very much fell in place in a way that it almost seems like fate, honestly, because as I mentioned, initially, traditional Christianity had taken with me when I was a teenager and a young adult, and mm-hmm. I actually always thought I was going to be a military chaplain. I studied for a master's degree in religion that I finished in 2011, and really the mm-hmm. only reason I didn't go that route right away was I was 24, I was single, I'd just graduated. I'm like, I don't have the right to be anybody's pastor. I have no life experience, right? So I joined the military, and I have this sort of opening up to different viewpoints and to being in nature for the first time and all these things that sort of challenge the little structures that I had before. And after years of attending open circles at Fort Bragg, I think it took me about 3 years, really, and it was just sort of a slow transition. I don't think until about 3 years of attending I would have even called myself pagan. It just sort of happened over time, like mm-hmm. a natural change in the way I saw things and the way I did things. But once I got to the end of my enlisted service, initially I had intended to go get an MBA. I was going to go into marketing, do advertising, that sort of thing. But I felt very strongly called by my gods. I was like, well, now it's your time. You mm-hmm. should go try to do the chaplaincy thing again. And, you know, in my mind's eye where this conversation's occurring, I'm just like, what are you talking about? We don't even have organized churches like that. We don't have anybody mm-hmm. who's doing that. And so I just sort of put out the challenge. I'm like, well, if you want me to go this way, you know, show me the first couple steps. And then literally 2 days later, Christine Ahrens, who's in charge of the open circle, she's like, well, you do know that we're part of Circle Sanctuary, and Circle Sanctuary has been trying to get somebody into military chaplaincy for mm-hmm. literally decades
now. Very long
now.
Time.
Really?
Right.
And it's one of those things where the open circle, and I think it's one thing that if there is anything that we needed to improve on, that's probably one thing we could improve on is tying the circles better to Circle Sanctuary. But the open circles very much act like our truest kind of satellite churches. You know, they have the capability to do everything. They have their cycle of services monthly. They teach classes, all these sorts of things. So it was really exciting to find out that, you know, this wasn't just some one-off thing that I'd found at my military post. Like, this was part of a larger tradition. And so I went to my first pagan spirit gathering to sort of test the waters, and it was instantaneously like, oh, I'm home. You know, and I had been going to open circles at that point for about 5 years. So it was pretty quick from there to transitioning into the MTP program and finishing up in the course of a couple of years from 2019 to 2021. But and the one thing I do want to add to that, and it's similar uh-huh. to what Andrew said. One of the things I do appreciate about Circle is that it's similar in the sense that, you know, it's a tradition of many traditions, because I think mm-hmm. I think paganism still in its sense of becoming. It's still in a process to sort of figure itself out. And I like the fact that we almost act like a laboratory for a bunch of traditions to come together and create new ways. So I also appreciate the sense in which, you know, we will have heathen circle members, we will have Wiccan circle members, we will have mm-hmm. indigenous past circle members, and so on and so forth.
It's interesting. A lot of people have a hard time either accepting a pagan minister, or a lot of people who are traditionally in pagan, in groups or covens, where they're used to priests or high priestesses, they have a hard time with the concept of a pagan minister. Did either one of you all, what was the reception you got from your communities when you became a minister?
For me, it was wholly positive. In all fairness, I probably had the road to least resistance in this regard, and I could totally see where you'd be coming from with that. because, you know, there is probably this sense in which we are now becoming organized. Neo-paganism,
right,
really, you know, it started out as self-interested sort of people sort of discovering old ways and little groups, and you'd have your sort of internally blessed off clergy to that, some of whom claimed connections to ancient traditions, but more often than not did not have those things. And so to have somebody come in and say, hey, I'm the minister and I'm professionally trained, I can see how there would be that conflict. I think I was kind of blessed to have the road of least resistance in that our priestess at Fort Bragg, Christine, I'm pretty much a product of her with regard to teachings and with regard to, she's the one who sort of set me on this course. So in a roundabout way, I am sort of the fruit of her labor, and I hope to do her proud in the future should the military chaplaincy thing go. I have kind of thought about how that might play out in places that I'm not just as well known of an entity, though. And I do think diplomacy is the best way to go in, like recognize that many of these folks that have the title of priest or priestess or whatever that coven may use, they may not be professionally trained, they may not be ordained by a tax-exempt organization, but they've been doing the work for decades. And so I think when you come in and you have that sort of firmly entrenched leadership, I think the best way to kind of build that relationship is, you know, you talk to that person and say, hey, I'm here to support. I'm not here to take over. Here is what I offer, and if it can augment what you do. And a lot of times the way I think that can happen is, you know, because Circle is a federally recognized church, the priestess or the priest can do a hand fasting. They may not be able to do a legal marriage. We can do a legal marriage more often.
Right.
So we offer capacities that these sort of localized priests and priestesses may not. And I think we should see it as adding rather than replacing.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it's just a change in culture. For so many years, a lot were considered themselves the hidden children, and it just wasn't really well known. And I would say it's more well known. And I think I received some initial pushback years ago when I first became a minister. But I will tell you, when people are sick or they're in the hospital, they're really glad to see someone who either shares their faith or has an understanding of their faith. So I think as time goes on, I think you'll see a lot less resistance and a lot more people appreciating the new role that's evolved.
Yeah. And I can say from my perspective, Deborah, I work full-time as a hospital chaplain, and, you know, the pagans that I know here in this area are very excited, and but Circle is my primary community, so it really hasn't become an issue. But what's interesting at working as a hospital chaplain is, you know, the orientation of a hospital chaplain is I'm not coming representing my tradition or my traditions. I'm there to understand, you know, where the patient or the family member is coming from, and if they have a tradition they're connected with, and I'm there to help them draw on their own tradition. So every once in a while I'll get asked, you know, are you ordained or what tradition are you from? And, you know, just like if I'm in a counseling role, it's like I reveal information about myself in a way that's going to be helpful to that person. So sometimes you know, if it's someone where I think that might be a barrier, I'll tell them, you know, I don't come representing a particular tradition. I'm here to learn, you know, about what's most helpful to you or something to that effect. If I know someone is nature-based, or it's interesting here on the California coast, there are a lot of nature-based spiritual folks here whose connection with nature is their primary spirituality, and you know, and sometimes I'll share with them that I am ordained with a nature spirituality church, and that's something that's really helpful, and that they'll know that I have a level of understanding of perhaps of their what's meaningful to them than somebody that doesn't have that connection. And there was it ended up not happening, but a patient in the hospital was wanting to get married. They were declining from cancer. They had always wanted to get married, and it was a heathen couple. And so they were asking me if I could do a wedding here at the hospital, and you know, as an ordained minister. And then I revealed, you know, more about Circle Sanctuary and whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were really excited to learn about that. So, in my role, I'm typically not, you know, walking and introducing myself as a pagan minister. I'm here as a healthcare chaplain, and I'll reveal my ordination, you know, in times when I think it's going to be beneficial for the other.
That's great. So I know each of you are involved in different ministries at Circle. And Andrew, I know you're very involved in eco-activism. Can you explain to our listeners what that is and tell us a little bit about your ministry?
Well, sure. I've, you know, like probably most of the listeners here, being someone who loves the earth, loves the trees and the oceans and the waters, loves the land and has a connection with the land. When I witness the destruction of the health of the land and the waters, it causes me a great deal of pain and sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so, going back to when I was in high school, I subscribed to a newsletter put out by the Physicians for Social Responsibility called No Nukes News, and I became very, you know, I was really surprised to learn about nuclear power and the problem of nuclear waste and all the risks involved with that, and that's really was the beginning of me becoming more active. And then, you know, I've had experiences, you know, I would say spiritual visionary experiences of the destruction of the planet that led me to leave my first career, which was an audio engineer. And I decided I wanted to devote myself, you know, more wholeheartedly to doing what I can to protect the sacred and protect nature. And you know, really seeing it as it's not necessarily a problem of we don't know enough about the harm we're causing. It is really kind of a worldview that sees nature as something to be exploited for human, you know, gain, and that our relationship with nature is not in balance. And so I've been involved in a variety of ways, but you know, when I was younger, I used to risk arrest and get arrested a lot more and different direct actions. And then when I got married and we had our son, I felt I had to kind of pull back a little bit because I have a lot of different responsibilities, right? Dad just can't be in jail. So when my son was in high school, it was just kind of like, okay. And, you know, there was a campaign against the Keystone Pipeline that was organized by Rainforest Action Network and a few other environmental organizations, and they were looking for action leaders all over. And I just kind of felt that, you know, if I don't take action now, then when? And I was also cognizant that, you know, when my son gets older and the effects of climate change become more pronounced, and just imagining my son asking, you know, Dad, what did you do to try to stop this? I wanted to be able to say, you know, more than clicking emojis on Facebook as my response to what's going on. So I was trained up to be an action leader and trained over 100 people in nonviolent civil disobedience and organized a variety of actions, including ruining Obama's, when Obama came to San Jose and his motorcade along the road. There was a very visible presence of people that were unhappy that he wasn't taking stronger action against the Keystone Pipeline. And that and putting pressure on banks such as Chase Bank and Wells Fargo Bank, which are major funders of fossil fuel infrastructure, and, locking ourselves, closing down the banks and going to their headquarters and, locking ourselves across the front door so they have to shut the whole headquarters for the day and things like that. So it's part of the solution. It's not the whole solution, but it's become more clear, especially after COP26 this year, that waiting for our elected officials and the business community to decide to do the right thing is just not we don't have that kind of time. And so I feel, even more strongly than I ever have that, people that love the earth and want to protect the earth for the earth's sake and also for the sake of future generations, I feel a moral imperative to take some sort of action.
Yeah, and our weather has been so crazy lately. I was traveling with family, and it was 70 one day and 38 the next day. It's just absolutely been, the climate change is just, I'm just always amazed by people who act like it's not real.
Yeah, and I used to live in Boulder, Colorado for a couple of years, and I know the fire that went through wasn't a wildfire. It went through two suburban areas and burned a lot of houses very quickly with high winds after very dry autumn and winter. And then the next day it dumped 8 inches of snow on the ground, and they're looking for survivors and going through the wreckage, it was all covered with snow, so that
it's crazy.
One day wildfire, the next day snow. And the storms that we saw earlier in the month that did so much damage. Our signs of what a destabilized climate is going to look like, and my fear is we're just getting started.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Well, it's a very important ministry, and congratulations, and I'm so excited. That's the thing that's come up is because we haven't had in-person festivals. I haven't gotten to meet and see people in person, so it seems weird. So James, tell us, your ministry special for Circle D is military ministry, and tell us about the military ministry at Circle and your involvement with it.
Yeah, so what's interesting is that what we do, and I think I mentioned this earlier, is that the Open Circles, which is the services we provide for people that are currently in the military, in a lot of ways, they're very much like the closest thing we have to like traditional church extensions of Circle Sanctuary, because they have their own local communities that meet for ritual and education and all these other sorts of things. But one of the challenges, I think, and this is the part I play, is that when you get out, when you leave, either because you ETS, that's the word for like your enlistment's over, or when you retire, it, just like everything else in your life, it's completely upended, because the military is its own culture with its own language, with its own very unique sets of experience. And in a lot of ways, this applies to religion as it's experienced in the military as well, because what's curious in the case of paganism is that paganism in the United States, it makes up about 0.3% of the population. In the military, in the active duty military, it constitutes about 1%. So it's represented at about a rate three times higher than in the general population. It is, and as you can imagine, because the military is its own culture, paganism also is expressed in its own sort of unique ways within the military. There tends to be a stronger emphasis on what you might call a militant paganism. You know, it very much the heathen traditions of, you know, a sense of honor and a sense of bravery and all those things are highly emphasized. Mm-hmm. Even Wicca, in my opinion, because I would consider myself Wiccan, I think it finds itself at its most masculine and horned god centric in the context of military services. So when mm-hmm. you get out, there is this sense of where do I belong? Do I go to my local metaphysical shop? Is there anything for me? Do I just sort of become mm-hmm. a solitary practitioner? And so I think what I do as an administrator for the Pagan Military Association, it helps veterans stay connected. It helps veterans, mm-hmm. and this is so vital as a veteran, I'll attest to this too. It is so vital for veterans to have places where they don't feel like they're the odd person out because of their
right.
unique sets of experiences and their unique outlooks on things, even like paganism. So I think the Pagan Military Association, which puts out messages, also tends to share information about circle events when they do holidays. It helps the veterans stay connected to each other. We also provide unique rituals throughout the year. For example, we quite often do a Memorial Day service, which, you know, you wouldn't necessarily find in a civilian coven for obvious reasons, just not as, you know, big mm-hmm. and as emphasized, but very important for us. So basically, my ministry with regard to the military right now is making sure that these veterans who find paganism quite often in the military still feel like they have a place to call home after the fact. And if anybody out there who's listening is interested in this, you can just look up the Pagan Military Association on Facebook. You'll see that we usually do biweekly messages of some type or another. We'll post things around the holidays. Sometimes we'll do full rituals that will get shared depending on if Circle's doing its own thing or if it's something, again, like Memorial Day that we're doing. So that's pretty much what we offer with
Pagan
Military.
Are you all doing anything online, Zoom? Are you doing anything online, Zoom, or is it in person?
It depends. The last time we did a memorial service, we did it as a recording. Actually, mm-hmm. though, we should probably start doing it as a Zoom. I really like that idea, so thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, at the moment, just because we don't – there's a sense in which if Circle is doing its own thing, we also want to get people connected with the wider Circle community. So, for example,
mm-hmm.
Yule, right? I wouldn't do my own Yule service. I would share that Circle is doing its service for Yule in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the idea of finding perhaps another couple military-centric holidays where it would be things more pertinent to us and possibly doing those live through Zoom. So I actually appreciate that idea. That may be something I'm going to look into going forward.
Yeah, it's, as I shared before, it's just so funny because I've not physically met either one of you. And that's one of the gifts of going to Circle. It's their in-person events on Circle Land in Wisconsin and or Pagan Spirit Gathering, which has, in the last couple of years because of COVID, it's not been in person, it's been online, or we've did Zoom, but I haven't gotten to meet people. And so, yeah, I look forward again when the pandemic's under control and we can meet more in person. But the good side effect of that is that I've been able to go to festivals. You know, for example, I couldn't take off work and easily get to California, but I'm able to attend a conference because it's now on Zoom. So, yeah, I think that there's some things that have opened up because of all of this that I think that aren't going to go away. I think they'll just continue.
Mm-hmm. And that's been really important to me also, being out here in California. You know, like I shared when I first learned about Circle, it's like, well, I'm in California, Circle's in Wisconsin. I didn't mm-hmm. see a way to be meaningfully connected, but I think as with all of Circle's social media and podcasts mm-hmm. and online rituals and events, it's really helped me be connected in a meaningful way, from California, if I'm not there on the ground. So I'm really appreciating that as well.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's here to stay. Although, I love in-person events. PSG is like going home for me every year. So I definitely will be going as soon as it's able to be in person. But I do understand people who either can't camp or it's not their thing, and that they would be able to participate in some ways through a virtual experience. So I think that is a change that's kind of here to stay. You know, this pandemic has really, really had a lot of people struggling. I know a lot of people struggle with connections. Have you all, what in your lives and in your practices has you seen change because of the pandemic? Or if any?
Well, I can tell you from my experience. Go ahead, James.
You can go first. You can go first, Andrew.
Well, you know, in my experience being a chaplain in the hospital, it's in some ways, you know, I can say, you know, I know a lot of people, it's affected their work and people mm-hmm. working from home, and a lot of people lost jobs, and there's been a lot of, you know, it's been really hard for a lot of people. In my experience, you know, being in healthcare, you know, my job is secure and I keep on showing up, you know, full time to my work at the hospital, and it's been more demanding than ever. But I see the impact it has on our patients, and especially, you know, when there's been major surges, when our hospital is in crisis mode, and we mm-hmm. don't have enough nurses, and we don't have enough ICU beds, and trying to figure out how we're going to triage the situation and really completely revamping the whole flow of the hospital's operations in order to handle the influx of COVID patients, and experiencing the fear and anxiety and the burnout from our medical staff, you know, our doctors and nurses and respiratory therapists. And also, you know, with the visiting restrictions, you know, people who are dying of COVID in our ICUs who aren't allowed to have family, and the family is not allowed to be there at the bedside. And so just seeing a lot of sadness, you know, it's been hard to bear witness and to participate in that. And, you know, in my role as chaplain, I'm someone who can, you know, go into the rooms with the proper protective equipment and, mm-hmm. you know, have an iPad at the bedside with the family on the other side and facilitate, you know, communication between families and patients. And, you know, sometimes the patients are awake and able to interact with their family, and it's a really good thing. Sometimes they're sedated and not able to interact, and the family is just saying their I love yous and talking and trying to say words of encouragement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've continued working, obviously, through this pandemic, but the work has gotten, you know, it's definitely been different, and I think that that the level of I know this, I hate to sound to be sharing this kind of suffering on the podcast, mm-hmm. but you know, it's been my experience that there's been a lot of suffering and a Absolutely. Lot of death that I've been involved with, and it's made me have to really focus even more strongly on my own self-care in order for me to stay grounded and healthy to where, you know, my batteries are charged up and I have, you know, I can bring my best self to the situations I encounter.
Absolutely, because you're right. Not only has it been just tragic for families and patients who can't be together, this has been tremendously stressful for staff, and I imagine a high degree of burnout with staff.
Yeah, and so a lot of my focus has shifted to supporting staff and providing, you know, check-ins, providing kind of group processing and critical incident debriefings with staff, and finding creative ways to support staff while we're also social distancing, so using a lot of technology like you know, Microsoft Teams and Zoom and things like that, where we can support staff while not all being in the same room. So yeah, it's been finding creative ways to provide staff support also.
Yeah. And I think that is a skill set in its own. Again, I remember when this first happened and spiritual groups I were involved in, we utilized Zoom, and it was a real struggle, and necessarily I don't know that it was very effective. And I think people have gotten much better about presentations and connecting, and people have gotten much more used to being a virtual connection now and have more meaning. It's funny, Selena, actually, I will give her a big kudos, taught me a lot as far as things like, you know, having a plant or flowers near the screen so people can see something green and fresh, and having everybody light a candle at the same time, connection. So I do think there's things that you can do to learn to do that, because I think people in this time of isolation and quarantine are really starved for connection.
Yes, yes, I agree.
And I think that kind of leads into the other aspect of a lot of the suffering is visible because, you know, you'll have deaths in families. I think it's one of those things where, you know, as bleak as it is, we've probably now reached a point where we all know somebody, maybe not a direct relative, but we know somebody who has either had permanent injury from COVID or has passed away from COVID. Like, the stories get closer and closer to home. But I think maybe the other side of the concern, and I say this probably having pretty close to the exact opposite experience, opposite professional experience during COVID than Andrew had, is to kind of look for the suffering that isn't stated either. And I say that because what's sort of interesting is I was doing clinical pastoral education, which means I was a chaplain intern, and that word's going to be important to the context rather than a chaplain. Mm-hmm. So when all of this occurred, I thought I was going to be on the front lines as well, and I was kind of ready for it. And they sent me home because I had the intern label on. So they were like, nope, we're going down to essential folks. And for a moment, it was like, oh, wow, there's my purpose. You know, like there's – and, you know, a lot of people, I think, had a rough adjusting to, well, I'm at my house. I may or may not have family. I may or may not be working remotely. I may or may not leave my house today in a lot of cases, especially for that first year when things were really restricted and everybody was trying to – go out even for essentials as little as possible. And and it makes me wonder, on the one hand, we have all these new connections from folks with folks who found the digital forum to be very useful to them. But I also wonder who's sort of been a casualty of that, who sort of, you know, hasn't sort of reemerged back into society and into life because, you know, if you don't have a good support network when something like this is happening, it's very, very isolating. And so with regard to kind of lessons learned, I think one thing that in the future, and we are looking to do this, one of the things that a traditional church model offers, right, is spiritual care. If you have some sort of psycho-spiritual problem, you can talk to the pastor or the priest or whatever the title is about it, right? And it gets called pastoral care or spiritual care. And I think that that needs to become a part of this digital model that is emerging as well for us. Like, we need to, in the future, offer spiritual care of, like, hey, I'm isolated, I don't have a support network, I'm struggling, can I talk to somebody who is ordained and trained to deal with this? I think that's something that should become part of the Circle toolkit in the future, and it's something I think that we're starting to see a need for, especially with how long this pandemic has gone on. And so some people are fighting the virus itself, and others are fighting isolation, depression, and all these sorts of related things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you had a problem with, and I know just in my own group in doing pastoral care, if you had a problem with depression, being quarantined did not make that very good. That did not help that situation. And
mm-hmm.
also, you bring up another point that we also experience. Virtual is great, but not everybody has access to a computer at home. So many folks, you know, they may only have access to a computer in the library, and the library may close at 6:00 at night, and so they can't attend things. So you're right. There's a lot more things to take into consideration as we look at all this.
Mm-hmm.
So what's next for you two? Anything new going to be coming up, or are you just going to be continuing on what you've been doing?
So in my case, what I was just discussing with regard to sort of integrating some of these traditional church
mm-hmm.
providings or church services into Circle. That's something that's kind of near and dear to my heart, and I've actually been authorized to begin doing that in a local capacity. So for the next 6 or so months, unfortunately, I will be traveling for business of the National Guard and on a podcast that's as in-depth as I'm going to get into it in 6 months, but until then, I will be attempting to essentially build up a Circle network within the Western New York area, starting very simple, not officially church planning or anything to that effect, but basically reaching out to the medical physical shops, reaching out to the universities and going, hey, I'm ordained, we're an official tax-exempt institution. If you need anybody to do anything ranging from like formal ritual services like weddings on down to like spiritual care, this is how you get a hold of me. And then seeing in the long term as well, if a group sort of coalesces around that, which may one day become the foundations of a church, but that's kind of future thinking in terms of the localized expressions of Circle that aren't the open circles of the military. That's one thing I'll be doing. And in the longer term, after my travel with the National Guard has concluded, we will be considering trying to put me up for military chaplaincy. However, very exciting. Also, one of those things though, where it's like we've fought this battle before, so hopefully in a couple of years, you know, I'll be able to provide good news on that front. But taking it, you know, very slowly with, you know, reasoned expectations and all that sort of thing. But those are my two focuses right now, trying to build the network up in Western New York, trying to see if that can become a template for things we can do around the country, and trying to just sort of continue to prep my military career to see if I can sort of break through that chaplaincy barrier for us.
Oh, that's very, very excited, James. Good luck. And Andrew, what's going on with you?
Yeah, and thank you, James. That sounds really exciting. For me, it's really building on, you know, what I have been doing. I'll be getting involved with Circle Sanctuary's Chaplaincy Committee and otherwise continuing my full-time work as a chaplain here. And I've been feeling, you know, the call to, you know, increase my eco-activism is even stronger after COP26 this year. And I don't know what that's going to look like yet, but I'm continuing to engage in activism and also just really what's become really central to me is staying really connected with the earth, and I live very close to the Pacific Ocean in Monterey Bay, and I've been really deepening my connection with the ocean and the sea, and I find, you know, with my work that both the awareness of the ecological situation and the work that I do day in and day out where I'm, you know, witnessing a lot of suffering, I'm finding that, you know, the earth takes care of me. And giving to the earth and entering more deeply into a relationship with the earth is an endless path of a beauty and sustenance for me. So continuing to deepen my connections with the planet and the waters, and learning how I can share and be of a deeper service to the Circle community.
All right. Well, our time is almost at a close. Reverend Andrew and Reverend James, I want to thank you both so much for taking time to come on our show to share your journey with us. And again, congratulations on your ordination to Circle Sanctuary.
Thank you.
And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that this pandemic is under control and that we have an in-person Pagan Spirit gathering, and hopefully I will get to meet both of you in person. So if not, I will be watching on the sidelines and seeing all the wonderful ways that your ministry is taking you.
Thank you, and that's my hope too.
I'll declare it. I will see you both at PSG. God willing.
Absolutely.
We just need the pandemic to simmer down now. Simmer down.
Just a little bit. Absolutely. Well, besides Reverend Andrew and Reverend James, I'd like to thank Dave, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, January 18th, and we will talk with author Opal Luna about her new book, Fiber Magic, A Witch's Guide to Spellcasting into Crochet, Knotworking, and Weaving. Spark imagination and crafting into your practice, because we're going to learn how to move magical intention from our minds to our hands. I look forward to being with you all again, so please come back. Good night, everybody, and blessed be.
One spirit in the dark, like a candle wavers. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community, the circle empowering. Like a cat. all empowering you and me. The circle binds, yet sets us free. In the goddess name, so mote it be.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.